Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So, Audrey, it is once again Wednesday night. I think we're like on week 8 of like, it's been like a couple months now, right? Since we've been able to really actually hang out in the studio together and like record conversations here for the old Tech Vibe Radio Show. And the last time I checked, we spent the last 2 months every afternoon. We're all nuts. Every afternoon doing our business as usual webcast. It's kind of ridiculous and it's kind of fun and it's kind of
cool. There's so many people to talk to.
I know.
There's so many people and it's so important, at least for the role that I think that we have. It's so important for us to really just have these conversations with people who are really understanding about what's happening, what are they thinking about, who's employed. I mean, Think about this. The unemployment stats are coming out. They're finally coming out. They're going to be lagging. Could be the highest unemployment that the United States has had since the Great Depression.
Well, I mean, when we had the Federal Reserve on last week, I mean, they're talking about potentially like 18, 20%. Like, I don't even, that concept just doesn't even register in my head as to that number of people that 2 months ago had a job but now don't.
But I think in the time when Steele left this community in the early 80s, I guess, They left this community, that there were places like Manassas and Denora and, you know, different parts of the Mon Valley that were highest 25%.
25%. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And I'm not saying, oh, whoopee, look at those days. Oh,
No.
I'm just saying that the bifurcation
it's that serious. Yeah.
You know, it's just a clarity. It's a clarity of time. And, you know, we're lucky we get to work in tech and innovation and mostly with people who are educated. But it's affecting all of us because it affects our restaurants. I mean, the thought of the restaurant scene that we've so carefully crafted over these last 8 to 10 years.
I know. We got to this really high point with all these great restaurants, and I'm just hoping they all come back.
It's hard for them to come back.
It's gonna be tough, though.
The margins are very thin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people who are in the restaurant business aren't, you know, they're not making boatloads of money. They don't have a year's worth of cash on hand. And particularly as they're new in the stage of all of their development. I mean, New York City alone, I think I read in the New York Times that there were 186,000 storefronts that were either retail or food.
Oh, my goodness.
And that they think maybe 10%, if we're lucky, will come back.
Right.
So when does New York come back? I mean, you know, that affects the world. It's like
a
country, and that affects all of us. But I say, now's the time to come to Pittsburgh.
There you go.
Now's the time that you can get a house. Mortgage rates are low. You can work from wherever.
Yeah, we proved that, huh?
People are going to want to live in houses, right? They're going to want to have a sense of their own space. You know, there's, you know, neurotic kind of thinking about elevators and, you know, people being in confined spaces and sharing of, you know, co-spaces, whether that's co-working or gyms or anything like that. So why not come to Pittsburgh?
Why not
build the capabilities here? Mm-hmm. So I'm still bullish. I don't think I'm being naive.
I would agree with you 100%. Absolutely.
That there's opportunities here. So, you know, if you can work from, you know, a place where you feel more spacious and it's safe, and, you know, there's good school systems and supports around that, why not? I think the tricky thing is going to be, how do people get around? How do people, you know, our buses and what happens with our airport? You know, my hat's off to Christina Kosotis and everything.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Airport, you've seen that she's worked with CMU. They actually have an antimicrobial scrubber that's running autonomously. That they're
UV light. It's pretty amazing.
Which is really amazing. It's great. Everything she does to sort of keep Pittsburgh on the map is incredible. Our friends at the Port Authority, you know, experienced, you know, dramatic 85% less riderships. You know, what does it mean to be on a bus? And I'm a huge fan of public transportation and air travel, et cetera. So, you know, we've had a chance to talk to some incredible people, though, too. I mean, just the Cleveland Federal Reserve does a daily sentiment survey. So really looking at not just data, but also information about how people feel and their confidence levels.
It's all about the confidence.
It is all about the confidence levels. And so what is the collective confidence level? It's not gotten better. It's not gotten better. It's been pushed out. Do people really think that they're going to be able to go back to work in the ways that they used to work? No. Microsoft and Amazon in Seattle have now said that their people can stay and work from home until at least October.
October? Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. See, it's going to show you how...
So that's October. That's going through spring, summer, and fall.
Yeah, it's craziness. I tell you what, one of the coolest things about doing business as usual every day at lunch has been the stories of success. Like we had Dr. Chris Howard on from Robert Morris University, the president of Robert Morris.
Hearing
him talk about how fast they were able to flip things around at the school and get people virtual and how they're going to be really creative going back to school. To me, that's like classic Pittsburgh problem solving right there.
Yeah. I mean, and he brings a sense of entrepreneurship paired with rigor.
Rigor. I like it. It's exactly it.
Very unusual. And it's done a lot for the university. Robert Morris, definitely one of the anchors in terms of economic development and attraction of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and diversity of people from, you know, in places where some of the other schools don't actually attract talent from. So it's really it's really great. We have such a cool job, Jonathan.
I'm telling you,
peeling back stories and listening to what people are really working on and not sensationalizing anything. It's quite a gift.
It's been crazy. And as I look through our archive, you go to pghtech.org, right on our homepage there, there's a link for it. And from that link, you can also join our webcast there as well, too. But like, there's just this backlog of just awesome stories. You can actually see how this whole pandemic has kind of swept through Pittsburgh by who we've had on these shows. It's just
Wow,
things we were talking about, everything from the first SBA loans to the second round. I mean, it's I feel like it's like a time capsule we have going on.
It is. We're going to have to historically preserve that in some chronology.
Exactly.
So it's really great. It's great. I'm glad about our show tonight. We have some really interesting guests. I mean, from autonomy, you know, Near Earth Autonomy, Sanjeev Singh and Marcel Bergerman have been working for a really long time in this space. These are not people who just popped out of graduate school. These are people who have deep, deep research based in electrical engineering as well as robotics.
And I hear like to play volleyball too.
I hear that, yeah. I thought it was Frisbee, but we'll hear more about volleyball.
I think it's volleyball, man. I'm just saying.
And then the ShareX notion, those guys really had the foresight to build capacity in their world. So very interesting to hear about, outside of doing Zoom, what other ways that we can, you know, connect virtually.
I think I want a t-shirt, Audrey, that says there's more to life than Zoom. We love it because it's keeping us together. At the same time, I want to like stab it with a blunt object.
Yeah.
So it's crazy times, but through these, we're going to keep telling these awesome stories about the resiliency of Pittsburgh, man. Pittsburgh's got grit. We're going to work our way through this, and we're going to tell it one story at a time, Audrey. Simple as that.
All right. Well, don't go away. This is Audrey Russo.
This is Jonathan Kirsting. Learn more about the Pittsburgh Technology Council, how we can help your company even during these crazy, crazy times. Go to pghtech.org. Back after this quick break. So glad you are here hanging out with us tonight on Tech Vibe Radio. The good stories keep rolling. We keep telling them. Do we not, Audrey?
We do.
Yes.
All day long, every day, around the clock.
Don't get too excited about it.
I'm very excited about this because I can't wait to dive into this. This is stuff that intrigues me.
You got
who do we have in the house tonight?
Guys,
you've got Marcus Vail from ShareX.
John Pugh from ShareX.
Yeah. ShareX is such a cool company, man. I love what you guys do, and I love your background. You guys have designed some of the coolest spaces and places and experiences for people over the years. Before all this COVID stuff broke down on us, we were talking in my office, and you were telling me about the BMW museums, all these things, and my head was going like this.
Wait, so you guys were friends pre-COVID?
Oh, yeah, totally, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, so this
we go way back.
We
go back like 3 months ago. It's pretty awesome.
That's why it's so fun to tell you what, you know, because you know what we were doing before. And now, you know, 3 weeks ago, Marcus and I had to pivot like 180 degrees to do something different. To how are we going to produce, you know, live events and engage audiences without three-dimensional architecture and having people get together at events and trade shows and auto shows. So this is, it's good. You kind of saw the building before it was remodeled, you know?
Exactly.
So, lucky guys.
So, I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys are absolute pros when it comes to all things, when it comes to experiences and events and putting this high-end stuff together. And give us a little background on that and some of the key things you've done. And then let's immediately jump into this new virtual world that we're living in, because I think that's just so important to talk about.
And then before we go on, so that people are listening in case they want to multitask, what's your website?
ShareExperience.co.
Okay, perfect. All right, let's jump in.
Okay, well, John and I, John used to be my boss, and we worked together in the exhibit industry for about 15 years, creating physical experiences for all kinds of products, marketers, brands, spaces. We did trade shows, auto shows, museums, ride and drive events, just so many different sort of physical experiences.
Good old days.
What's that?
The good old days.
Yeah. When you could go places and touch things.
Yeah, God forbid.
But now that you can't, we still feel that live experiences are critical for a lot of messages and a lot of organizations. And our expertise in creating live experiences still translates into this world. So what we're doing now is trying to create those in a hybrid format where substantially a lot of the event occurs digitally, but it's still live. It's still produced. It's still got professional talent and design involved. There's still physical set to it. So it's not a virtual thing like a, you know, like a video game. It's reality. It's live people. It's catered to you in that moment in real time, but it's remote.
And it's live and it's interactive and use a moderator so you can ask questions. And so it's between like a Zoom and broadcast TV, and it's affordable, and the lead time's, you know, 4 to 6 weeks once we get sit down with our clients and get a creative brief and go forward with producing, you know, this live production.
I love it. I mean, at the PTC, we're in the event business, right? This is why we're so interested.
Well, I think, how did you guys know? How did you guys know we were moving into this world?
Well, you know, we both left careers, long successful careers in the physical experience industry last year to create this company. And we did that for a lot of reasons. And for quite some time now, the physical experience industry has been changing and has been becoming hybridized. Marketing budgets were dictating a lot of that. Just the cost of holding physical experiences is significant. And then when you get into the measurement of them, they become a little tricky. You know, you guys know exactly how many people are going to your website, what they're doing, dwell times, where they came from, all that.
Right.
But at an auto show or a trade show, we have no idea who these people are and what they want and where they're going. It's guesswork. And so we've got lots of experience in understanding and making physical experiences successful. And we feel that a lot of that knowledge about human behavior and how messaging can be transmitted successfully, we feel a lot of that is still valid. Humans' brains have not changed. We still crave live interactions with people. We still place much greater confidence in those kind of interactions than just a banner ad on a website. And so we still feel like live face-to-face marketing is critical and may actually become more critical as, you know, certain parts of the physical world are shuttered off for various reasons.
And Zoom's not cutting it right now. I mean, we were talking about before we hit the record button. We all have some Zoom fatigue. You know, people are trying to be really creative with Zoom. Like, hey, join my happy hour on Zoom. Like, after 20 hours on Zoom, I'm not going back on Zoom to Zoom with people. I'm like, done with it. So I want something more interactive and fun.
Right. And we also knew that, I mean, going back to our working with BMW, or it could be BMW, it could be MSA, it could be any company is still going to have to do new product launches. They're still going to have to talk to their customers about new products, train their employees, get information out to the media and press. So that's where Marcus and I started brainstorming one day. And we thought, well, what if we set up these physical sets in corporate headquarters or factories and, you know, did the raised flooring, did the graphic and brand the backdrops and kind of make more of a set out of it, get live presenters, and you could, at headquarters, you have your product people there, you have your executives, you have your employees. So that's where we kind of merged the physical kind of creative part of things into a live kind of production from a corporate headquarters or factory. And that's where we partnered with Bruner to do the back end kind of technology,
cool
information and stuff. So,
well, I personally like to give a referral to Saturday Night Live because I think they need you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
I tried to watch two Saturday Night Lives with fairly decent people and I had to shut it off.
It was awful. Yeah. Yeah. Bad.
I think that the world is your oyster.
Well, we hope so. We're looking for, well, we're really excited about it because it really does kind of merge the physical environment with this new virtual new normal. And it's going to be exciting to execute. And I think it's going to be exciting to have something, you know, taking on its own presence at a factory. I think that'll be exciting for the employees. I think it'll be exciting for, you know, the people presenting, and, you know, it'll get it out to their customers and it'll be interactive. So I think it's really exciting. And it could be applicable to, you know, we're looking at maybe talking to university and athletic departments as well. I mean, they're having I know some folks at Duquesne and at Pitt, and they're having a hard time figuring out how they're going to communicate to their recruits and,
right,
you know, introducing like William Jeffries. And I mean, how do you get these messages out that without a Zoom and you can't go to broadcast? And so what are you going to do? So there's a lot of applications to it, really.
Wow. So you guys got to be up and running because the world is not going backwards.
It's not.
No,
of course.
It sure isn't. Yeah, we've spent quite some time setting up sort of the back end services, getting situated with streaming providers, negotiating all of the issues with all of that, the technological issues. And, you know, the goal for us is to provide something that is turnkey, that is seamless, and that still helps build your brand, because we feel like physical experiences and physically interacting with brands is one of the most important foundational elements in building a brand over a long time.
You know, I'd say, you know, as soon as the governor lifts, you know, whatever phase it is that we'd be able to execute this.
With the orange light or the purple light or the
pink? I can't remember.
And if you're allowed to maybe go outside and okay, you let me know.
The blue belt, the orange belt. Oh, no, that's no, but yeah, so I mean, we're ready to, as soon as they lift it, we're ready to go. We got everything kind of out, like Marcus said. So we're excited.
We're pumped for you guys because we just know how really this world is, and we just think it's awesome you guys are able to build something like this. And we just wish you nothing but success to make this thing happen.
We really appreciate it. You can tell we're excited about it. So thanks for the time and listening to us. We're ready to execute.
I love it, guys. Such cool stuff. Hey, we're taking a break. We're coming back with more Tech Vibe Radio. This is Jonathan Kirshning.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
The Pittsburgh Technology Council. We have great companies like Share Experience and hang out with us. Make sure you check out their website, shareexperience.co, and learn about what they're up to. We'll be right back after this quick break. Oh, Audrey, I'm so excited to start these segments off because I think we have what is probably Pittsburgh's top company when it comes to all things. I'm just saying, I just love what these guys do. Near Earth Autonomy just blows my mind. I've been watching some videos of like helicopters landing by themselves, like crazy things like that that can only happen in Pittsburgh. And we have the guys behind this for not one, but two segments, Audrey. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm happy to do a deep dive. But Jonathan, if you want to give them your resume, you don't have to be so clever that way.
Okay.
There's other ways we can get you a job over at Near Earth Autonomy.
Oh, really? Oh, I'd like that. That'd be cool. I could be like a test dummy. I'll lay down in the field and make sure the helicopter doesn't land on top of me. I'll do that kind of stuff.
So let's just do a welcome to two people at Near Earth Autonomy. Why don't we start with Sanjeev? Hi, Sanjeev. Nice to hear you. Nice to see you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And you are the CEO and founder. Is that correct?
Co-founder.
So give us a little bit about that, and then we will introduce Marcel.
Yeah.
Okay, so my thumbnail of myself is that I got to Carnegie Mellon in 1985 just in time to work on the very first self-driving car.
Really?
We now think about the very first. It was this big blue ambulance-sized vehicle called NavLab, and it arrived 2 weeks before NavLab showed up. And so I just finished my master's in a robotics topic, and I got this job at Carnegie Mellon. I came to work on it because there was almost nowhere in the world you could go to work on something like that in 1985. I worked on that for a number of years, started my PhD the first year that the PhD in robotics was available. Marcel and I were playing volleyball together as grad students, and then I lost track of him for a number of years. And then after I finished my PhD, I went on the faculty to do a number of things I had been working on in robotics, including earth-moving machines that were automated, machines for agriculture. And then somewhere in there, I got interested in aerial vehicles, and that started around 2000. And that led us one opportunity to the next one, to the point that we had an opportunity that was too big for the university, so we started New Earth. Marcel, myself, and two others, Lyle Chamberlain and Sebastian Scherer, who are not here today. So, and here we are.
I love it. How long have you found the company?
The company was officially got going 2012.
Awesome, man. Very cool.
That's great. So, Marcel, a co-founder, and you have a key role in the company. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the role.
Sure. So, Jonathan and Audrey, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys. You know, I listen to the show on my cell phone, on the podcast app, and always enjoy learning about our other tech companies in Pittsburgh. And it's an honor to be here representing our small company. So, a little bit of a similar trajectory to Sanjeev's, but with a lot of differences in between. Like he said, we were colleagues at the PhD program at Carnegie Mellon. He was in robotics. I was in the electrical engineering department. But it turns out that His brain is technology plus entrepreneurialism, whereas my brain is technology plus I like to read contracts. And, who knows where that comes from, but it makes for a fantastic partnership, right, when you put these things together. And I like to think that the COO of a company like ours is like the PCP for people, right? So the COO takes care of people, contracts, and projects. Right, that's where the PCP comes from. So we are always looking at hiring and maintaining the best staff, hiring and retaining the best staff, bringing in the contracts, both R&D and sales, products and services that will enable the company to grow, and then projects, running each and every project effectively, efficiently, making sure that the engine of the company is running so that the technical folks can go do their magic while everything is running.
That's a good partnership. The volleyball court. That's all I can say.
There's a more colorful version of that story. Marcel, you should tell it. I think we'll keep it or cut it out.
I'll be happy to. So I'm married to a fantastic woman for 28 years now. And she's about 5'3", and she's a fantastic setter in volleyball. She played volleyball all her childhood, including to high school. And Sanjeev, as you can imagine from his stature, he's a great spiker. So I could be in the team because we were in the same program, and we could bring plus ones. When people found out that my wife played fantastically, but for quote-unquote legal reasons of the league, I had to be on the team. They allowed me to stay, you know, in the far corner of the court, and my wife would play on my behalf.
So fast forward, what problems does near-Earth autonomy solve?
Okay, great. So Near Earth is in two businesses, and you know there's a common thread, a common core technology, but we're thinking about what real problems, not just the technology, right? So one thing that we get a lot of play for is what we call aerial mobility, which is the function of moving things from one place to another. And what things? Well, all these new applications in terms of moving cargo and people. Also think about this as drone delivery or aerial taxis. This is a kind of a future business, very interesting, possibly hugely disruptive. You think about this as, you know, some version of an aerial version of a self-driving Uber, right? So we don't build the aircraft. We build the core technology that keeps these vehicles safe and keeps them efficient. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do before the aircraft flies, and then during the flight to keep it safe. And then in case something goes wrong, it's not so easy to stop in midair or to pull over, so to speak. So then you have to have all of this planning for what the vehicle is going to do if there's a problem. So all of this technology to make these applications real is what comes under the mobility umbrella. There's a second kind of a problem we think about broadly as in digitizing the 3D world. Okay, we know about digitizing the 2D world. Now, you think about capturing the 3D world. Why would you want to do that? Is typically you want it to be from the air, the start of some data analytics pipeline that there's some advantage to actually doing this from the air. There's a lot of things you can survey much easier from the air than you can do from the ground. And so what it is we developed this technology to make these kinds of inspections possible. So inspecting bridges or towers or tunnels, etc., where you need to get data to be able to figure out if there's a problem, see how issues are progressing over time, that kind of thing. We enable that kind of application also.
How about power lines? A few weeks ago, I saw a helicopter with people hanging from it, dangling, inspecting power lines. It mesmerized me, and I thought, that has to be super dangerous. I'm feeling like some sort of drone should be doing that.
Yeah, it could be done by drone. There are some issues in terms of risk and in terms of regulation that we have to deal with. In the west part of the country, there are very wide open spaces where power lines are going through very rugged terrain. It's not easy for somebody to get there in any other way. And it would be nice to be able to continuously survey these things to catch problems before they emerge. So there are two issues here. One is, could you put sensors onto a helicopter that's manned and then fly over that and get that data? And then there's a second issue as to whether you can automate some sort of an aircraft that could do the equivalent kind of thing. So, you know, in between there's some value proposition. The flying by itself beyond visual line of sight is something that the FAA restricts today. And so we have some regulatory issues that we have to deal with. We also have to show that these things are reliable enough that they can, you know, fly on their own. And if something goes wrong, like I said, that they have the technology to be able to deal with these contingencies safely.
So how are these problems being solved prior to near Earth?
Well, part of our issue is that there's a large number of applications where inspections are not done today. So there's a brand new market. Okay, so the idea is that just about any industry wants to digitize their operations. You know, just like my wife does. She's an eye surgeon, and if you go see her, she looks, you know, at your eye, and she might track some defects. And you come back next year, she's going to compare that to what happened the previous year and see if there's a problem there, because they have this kind of digitization and very accurate sensing that they can do. This idea is very common in all kinds of industries. You want to do this. In some cases, people want higher reliability. They want to catch these problems before they occur. So if you have a tank farm where they're storing fuel, the risk of there being a leak and then that leak getting hit by lightning and causing that whole thing to go up in flames is tangible enough that there's a fiscal value associated with it. So the idea is, well, you know, there's an opportunity. If we can catch these things early, there's something there, even if it's not being done today. The fact that this needs meticulous kind of inspection is hard to do by people. And, you know, so some of these inspections are not done, or they're done at great risk to people. If you want to inspect the bottom of a bridge, you have to have people in these interesting contraptions go underneath the bridge, a high bridge, and look at it. And, you know, they may not be able to catch every detail. So these are some kinds of opportunities. Now, on the transport side, I think there are new opportunities coming up all the time, right? This is a brand new market, just like it is with a number of self-driving car applications.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We've had a chance to talk to the founders of Near Earth Autonomy, so don't go away. We will be right back and continuing the conversation. This is Audrey Russo.
This is Jonathan Kersing. Be sure to go to pghtech.org, learn all about the Tech Council and our awesome members like Near Earth Autonomy. We're coming right back with these guys, we swear. Welcome back. Audrey, we're having way too much fun talking to our friends from Near Earth Autonomy. Every time I ride my bike past their HQ in the East End, I look in there trying to peer in the window, see what they're working on. I'm like, oh man, those guys are solving some tough problems. It's like, it blows my mind the technologies that they're working on, Audrey. It really does. It really does.
So, Marcel, we're back with Marcel Bergman, COO and co-founder, and Sanjeev Singh, who is the founder and CEO. And we are going to now talk about, you know, what can we imagine in terms of the technology and the achievements going forward? Why the importance of Near Earth?
So imagine two scenarios, Audrey. Scenario number one is like this. A hurricane went by some region. There are thousands of people stranded in hundreds of communities and neighborhoods. You can't drive and bring them food or medicine or rescue them because the roads are flooded. You cannot send rescue with large helicopters because there's no place to land. But you could instead, and we will in the future, be able to send hundreds, maybe 500 conference room size flying vehicles who are equipped with the sensing and the software. necessary to fly safely, avoid cell phone towers and trees and wires, and get to the neighborhood by following just some simple GPS waypoint. And then once they get there, they will, on their own, with no human intervention, no one in the background, find a safe place to land that's flat and level and dry, and then maybe sound a horn and people come and get water, food, and medicine and supplies they need to survive another 48 hours. And those machines could even fly back with people who need immediate assistance, right? Someone who is injured, for example. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is, like we were discussing before, imagine if we could, essentially with a touch of a button, send a flying vehicle to follow a transmission line over hundreds or thousands of kilometers, taking imagery to find where transformers may be overheating or vegetation is encroaching. Imagine we could do this over pipelines and automatically find leaks and places where methane is leaking and could be a danger. Imagine we could do this over and around bridges and find defects that could put people in danger months or years ahead of time. Right, so these are the scenarios we are working hard to enable in the next several years and decades.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing vision, and I think of what would have happened in Puerto Rico that might have been different had Near Earth Autonomy, you know, been up and running back during that period of time. So, you know, it's always fabulous to talk to people who have the kind of visions of making the world an amazing place. What needs to happen, Sanjeev? So let's switch to you. What needs to happen to make flying cars like a reality? Let's sort of jump to that. You have a deep background in autonomy.
Yeah, that's a great question. I try to think about this at a high level that sort of abstracts from a specific technology. And I think that if you want this kind of technology to be commonplace, you need three things. You need these vehicles to be capable, you need them to be reliable, and you want them to be economical, all right? So these are three different aspects. Capable meaning, you know, you can do these kinds of things that that can't be done today. Reliable is they have to have extremely high safety standards, and then they have to be operable at a cost where it makes sense. These are three high bars on their own, but put together, you know, what we're trying for is something like faster, cheaper, better. I want all three. Right. And, you know, the engineer's heuristic is faster, cheaper, better, big two. Right. So that is the what I think needs to happen if these things are to be commonplace. So what we look for is a compelling case where, you know, as a stepping stone, where only two of those things are necessary. You know, so there are some early adopters for who capability or reliability or cost is not absolutely essential at the front end. And I think you need that kind of pick two of those cases, make it compelling to be able to make all three of them possible at the same time. So we're working on a number of such cases, and the trick is choosing these things such that they, you know, take us along our roadmap and get us to where we want to go.
Well, so, you know, here we are. We have a chance to talk to you during this crazy point in time of our existence and, you know, where people have had to shelter in place and stay at home and work. And you guys have done really interesting things to support your employees as well as small businesses during this period. Marcel, do you want to talk about that?
Sure, Audrey. Look, we are trying to do what we hope everybody else is trying to do, which is prioritize health and safety as our number one concern of our staff, right? We want to make sure that the staff and their families and their loved ones are in a good place and they stay healthy for the duration of the crisis, and that we all come back to fulfill the vision that we set out to create back when we created the company more than 7 years ago. So today, over 96-97% of our total hours are being conducted from home. right? Some intensive investment and hours dedicated by our IT and flight operations department to enable that, mm-hmm. right? We've adapted and created mechanisms for people to access the resources they need in the office from their homes. And then we limit access to the office to some very specific people in very specific cases. Very strict hygiene measures. And as far as working with the community, we did something that we hope that, again, let me just say that again. We are doing something that other companies are doing as well, which is to promote local eateries and restaurants by giving our employees an allowance every other week so they can go out and buy food, help their local, eating places, restaurants, bars, etc. It helps our employees, gives them a break because there's a lot of stress. In these times, right, working from home, managing family, managing the kids, staying far from each other. We want to try to alleviate that stress. And on a bi-weekly basis, we give everybody an allowance to pick up food and enjoy that at home with their families.
Well, that's fantastic. And, are you hiring right now? I hate that we're going to have to end this soon, but are you hiring?
We are hiring. We are hiring. In fact, we have a few positions that we are looking for immediately, an embedded system engineer, software engineer. We are expanding our business development group, right? Because we have solid technology, and that solid technology goes out in the world through business development activities. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the groups we are growing the fastest now.
Very cool.
Well, what's the website? Near Earth Autonomy?
So it is www.nearearth.aero, A-E-R-O, as in aeronautics. You can also get yours through nearearthautonomy.com.
I love it. So, Audrey, there's one question we have not asked these guys.
Okay, uh-oh. What's that?
And we can't let them off the hook until they actually answer this.
All right, let's go.
I'm just saying, so, what's it really going to take to make flying cars a reality? Because I know you guys could probably do that.
Sanjeev talked a little bit about that a minute ago.
Yeah, I just want more on this. Like, how we're going to...
Jonathan can't let this go.
No. Like, what's it really going to take?
Yeah. I'll give you the second level answer here. The thing that's going to make this concept, the Jetsons world, happen is what we call distributed electric propulsion, which means basically electric vehicles that have multiple rotors. Now, why is that so much better? Because when you have the standard helicopters, they're expensive to acquire and they're expensive to maintain. The cost of operation of helicopter is pretty high. When you have this new kind of technology, what happens is that these things are lower cost, and they're lower cost to acquire and lower cost to maintain. So that is the possibility. The trick here is that battery technology is not quite there yet to make these things ready for prime time.
Okay.
No matter how you scale them, we seem to get about 15 or 20 minutes of useful life out of them. So I think that battery density is going to help this. These aircraft are going to be viable as aircraft by themselves, so they could be flown by anything. And then on top of that, we need to marry autonomy technology so that these aircraft can fly by themselves. So it's a kind of a longer road. You bring, it's not as if we're in the exact same place as the self-driving car world is, because we have very decent cars available, electric or otherwise, today, and they're affordable, etc. The thing is that today helicopters are millions of dollars to buy, even the a decent helicopter that
could. It's a mere detail. Mere details right now. This is the answer I was looking for. I love it. I love it. I love it. You guys are just the best, making Pittsburgh super, super proud, because this is what's making Pittsburgh go forward, is companies like Near Earth Autonomy. Just amazing stuff all right. The way around. Can't thank you guys enough for taking your time out of your days. We all know we're super busy now and zooming in with us. Great stuff.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys as well. Thanks for the opportunity. And yes, when things start to open up, Jonathan, please stop your bike in our bike room. Come in. We have a great coffee.
Now you're talking. All right, I'm stopping in for sure. There's no messing around, guys. You're the best. Another Tech 5 under our belt. Yeah. Audrey, nothing stops us from telling the awesome stories making Pittsburgh completely cool. And that's with Near Earth Autonomy, guys. So I can't thank you enough. Hey, learn more about the Tech Council at pghtech.org. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Have a great night, everybody.